friends, and welcome back to another episode of the Warrior Mind Podcast. I'm Greg Swanson, your mental strength coach, guide, and mentor. To find out more about mental strength and Warrior Mind Coaching, you can visit www.warriormindcoach.com. And our blog is at www.warriormindcoach.com/blog. And as usual, my good friend and producer Rishi is here.
Thank you, Greg. What will we be discussing today?
Well, this is, we've talked a lot about the mind and different things throughout the process. And you and I discussed having a hypnotic session. And I felt that that might be fun to do, unless somebody's driving in their car. But I thought maybe we could talk about self-hypnosis and actually a process that Elizabeth Erickson, Milton Erickson's wife, found very effective to doing self-hypnosis. And I thought we could discuss a little bit about hypnosis, some self-hypnosis, the good, the bad, the ugly of it, and then go through the process of this, the process that Elizabeth Erickson uses on self-hypnosis. I will post the details of it on my blog underneath it. But it's a very, very interesting process that Mrs. Erickson goes through. And I don't know if you're familiar with it or not.
I've heard of Erickson. However, I did not know that Mrs. Erickson also had a method involved.
Yeah, apparently she has done some very, very good stuff on this, on the self hypnosis part, where Milton Erickson did it. You know, he was the aficionado with trance induction from a client perspective. So he was very, very familiar, very good at that. And I guess she's kind of been under the radar for this case. But it's very interesting about hypnosis. You know, we talked about before we went on the air if you've done some self hypnosis and. I think we all have, and just to underscore the fact that all hypnosis is self-hypnosis. If you don't want to go under, you don't.
that's good to know, meaning that there's no type of brainwashing involved, correct?
Correct, right, and that's a whole nother. And it's amazing that, you know, as you and I read more about things and the term brainwashing and hypnosis, I'm just still surprised at how it goes. Some people associate both of them. I mean, there is an actual definition of brainwashing, which involves sleep deprivation, food deprivation, isolation for 5 days, and complete submergence into the topic of what you want to brainwash the person on. I mean, there is a specific, if one of those is missing, then it can't be brainwashing. It has a very specific process about it, not that anybody would want to know it.
That's right, and we do not do any of that here.
Right, so you in the background, be quiet. So hypnosis, whether somebody helps you, whether you use a CD, whether it's a stage hypnotist, or whether you do it yourself, all hypnosis is self-hypnosis.
Now, you mentioned stage hypnosis. Could you define the difference between the entertainment side of hypnosis and hypnosis that's used to bring change?
Yeah, and it's actually one and the same. It's just used for different applications. The stage hypnosis, obviously, is to show how powerful hypnosis can really be, and it's entertaining, and that can also create a belief mm-hmm. for people who want to go into hypnosis that they feel that they're going to be forced to stand up and on their chair and cluck like a chicken and all of that. And when I do hypnosis with clients, I'll go through that process to let them know that they are always in control. So the interesting fact is that the people on stage actually want to do what they're doing.
Yes.
At some level, they want to be that exhibitionist. They want to do that. And so they're just allowing themselves to go into that state where if you've ever seen it on TV or a live show, the hypnotist will go up there and he'll start talking to different people. And he can tell as they get more proficient at it, who will go under and who won't, but just by some body language. So he asks them to leave, and then he puts them all underneath a light trance and sees how they respond. So he keeps weeding, or she keeps weeding them out mm-hmm. based on how they respond to certain stimulus or certain suggestions.
And it's also the stage hypnotist that picks out the ones who are most eager to go on stage, and he knows. And those are the volunteers in the audience, you know, who raise their hand high, the highest, or who's saying, pick me, and the hypnotist will just give this look as if, you know, he's still scouting the room, but he knows who to pick.
Yeah, exactly. So it's all part of the act. And you know, the stage hypnotist, they do a service on their side of the, you know, by providing entertainment. Some of them actually have clinics where they help people, you know, lose weight, stop smoking, increase self-confidence, and do a lot of other things. And I think the one thing that's important to understand with hypnosis is that you're working with somebody who, we've talked about the brain waves before, right? The beta, alpha, theta, delta. And when you're in hypnosis, you're in that alpha state again, you know, that incredible alpha state. That's the state where you're just open to suggestions, where you do your journey work, where you do a lot of great work with your unconscious. See, you have your conscious mind,
yes,
which we all know about. And then we have our subconscious or unconscious, depending on how you want to define it.
To review, would you say that your conscious mind is in beta, and when you're in alpha, you're sort of getting into your subconscious mind?
Right, and how that happens is between the two of them, there's a critical factor. There's a barrier, right? So that as when you have two things and they're together, there has to be a barrier that separates them.
Yes.
Right? So what separates the conscious from the unconscious? Well, that's your critical factor.
Okay.
And by allowing yourself to go into an alpha state, that critical factor kind of dissolves so that you're able to access the unconscious mind directly. And that's what this technique with Elizabeth Erickson, which we're going to get into, goes about. And part of it, you know, when you either meditate and they say focus on your breathing.
Yes.
On that. Excuse me. That's to give your conscious mind something to do. If
yes.
Your conscious mind didn't have something to do, it would wander all over the place.
Yes. And by something to do means don't let your mind wander all over the place. That's
right.
Not a good thing to do.
Right. So with most of the hypnosis that we're familiar with, that there's people giving us suggestions. Even on the tapes, you know, there's the CDs that we get. We go into an induction. The person talks to us. So we get a CD about stopping smoking. They'll go through some hypnosis suggestions on stopping smoking and weight loss and that. This particular process that Elizabeth Erickson does has none of that. And it's a really cool process because it basically lets your unconscious mind do its work that it's supposed to do. It doesn't program or put anything into your unconscious.
So your unconscious mind is just running its course.
Right. So yeah, we'll go through that a little bit. And so this hypnosis has some same principles around it that, you know, hypnosis is a state of concentrated, focused attention. You know, you can look at a flame. Mm-hmm. When you're in a movie, excuse me, if you're in a movie, you're kind of in a hypnosis state because you're focused attention.
You're so engaged in
yes.
the plot.
And going into hypnosis involves turning your attention away from external experiences and directs it internally. So you have your feelings, your senses, and that internal representation we've talked about before is your visual, your auditory, your kinesthetic. You can have olfactory and gustatory, but most people don't have those internally, per se.
Yeah, they can't really internalize smells so much.
But smells do create memories, right? So you had that home cooking at Thanksgiving or whatever
yes.
else, and the smells come around. Yes. And the other premise is that you can trust your unconscious mind. That's a presumption that you can trust it. And
I hope so.
Right.
that's what you're stuck with.
And here's what's really cool for this process of change with self-hypnosis is that understanding by your conscious mind is not necessary for change. So you don't have to know. So there's in some of the teachings that I've gone to, education change happens in the unconscious. So your conscious mind doesn't have to know how to create the change for the change to occur.
Oh, that eliminates a lot of work.
Right. And that's where beliefs and trust come in, right? Because if you trust your unconscious mind to do the work, your unconscious mind's going to like, I don't want to trust that. I have to know how change is going to happen. I have to know it, right? But your conscious part of your mind doesn't have to know how the change is going to occur. And that's what's really, really interesting about this is that it takes that leap of faith in yourself when you go to this process.
Very interesting stuff.
Yep. So if you want, what we could do is go through the technique. I'll describe it first briefly, and then you can ask questions about it as we go along, and then I can go through the whole thing. I'll bring it together at one lump sum.
Okay, and if you hear me snoring, you'd have to nudge me to get out of that too much of a deep state.
Absolutely, absolutely. We'll do that. So the first thing that you do when you sit down to go into a self-hypnosis is you have to determine the length of time that you want to go under.
Okay.
And you actually just make a statement to yourself, I'm going to go into self-hypnosis for 20 minutes.
Okay.
So you give yourself that time. And you could even put yourself as an exit warning that if when 20 minutes passes the first noise that you hear, you'll come out of it. So you want to program your or give your unconscious the suggestion to come out.
And we discussed this before in an earlier recording that your mind also has an internal alarm clock. So meaning that when you set yourself for 20 minutes, and as you said, the first sound you hear after 20 minutes will get you out of that state. Well, that's the internal alarm clock that's working.
Right. And that's, we did mention that before that I don't use an alarm clock. I just go to sleep and I say, okay, I'm going to wake up at 4:30. And so far this week, I've been waking up at 4:22 almost every morning. So it's really working well. So you set down the time that you want to do the process. And then you want to give your unconscious mind the purpose. You want to have a reason for doing this. And it could be the purpose for allowing my unconscious mind to make the adjustments that are appropriate to assist me in becoming more self-confident, to assist me in becoming a better salesperson, to assist me in understanding my life's purpose.
So in other words, you have a plan or a strategy laid ahead of you before you're going to be going into this hypnosis.
Yeah, it can be used, it could be set as an intention, but okay. It's giving your unconscious mind direction as to what to do. Your unconscious mind is like, it loves to follow direction. It loves to do things that it's asked to do. If it doesn't, then it gets kind of bored. And so you're giving it instructions that the purpose of this is to help me and assist me. And you tell them your unconscious mind what you need the assistance in.
And knowing that your unconscious mind loves to take instructions, that's just reassurance that you're in control as well.
Exactly, exactly. And that's the part where you trust your unconscious to know what to do.
Okay.
Right? So that's that. The conscious mind doesn't have to know anything about it, but the unconscious mind, you have to trust it. So when you give it these instructions, it's going to be fine. And then the exit state. Almost every single hypnosis CD that I've heard has you come out wide and awake, refreshed, feeling great.
Yes.
Well, if you're doing this before bed,
you do not want to be wide awake,
right,
refreshed, feeling great.
So you can say, so you give yourself, when I come out of it, you give yourself again some instructions that if it's first thing in the morning before work, you can say wide awake, alert, and refreshed. If you're doing this before bed, you could say relaxed and ready for sleep. So give yourself those specific exit state when you come out of it. It's pretty important, right? Because like you said, you want to come out wide and awake, ready for sleep. And
yes, or very sleepy and drowsy before you have a work meeting at 7 a.m.
Exactly. That is exactly right. So that's the setup, right? So we set it up where you give the time, you give the purpose, you say the state that you're going to come out of it. And then the process. The process involves external into internal. And you're going to use the visual, auditory, and kinesthetic process. So what you would do is sit, relax, take a couple of deep breaths after you give yourself these directions. And you would look around the room and find something that's visual. You would look for something and go, oh, there's the planter or the pot or the door handle.
Can it be something different every time with each session, or do you prefer to have the same object?
No, it doesn't matter. Again, so this whole process, what I'm about to go over, is to keep the conscious mind occupied.
Okay.
So you would go through, so you'd find one thing visual, find another thing visual, and find a third thing visual.
Okay.
And then you would listen for three auditory things. So you go visual, there's a spot on the wall, there's a desk, there's a AC outlet. Auditory, oh, I hear a bird, I hear my dog, I hear the people yelling next door to me. And then you go to kinesthetic. I feel myself sitting in the chair. I feel the clothes on me. I feel, so you do three feels.
This is probably something you shouldn't do while driving, correct?
Absolutely. Any hypnosis, whether it's self, well, all of itself, but any hypnosis, anything that would put you into the altered state of consciousness should not be done while driving.
Does that include driving with a hypnotherapist?
Exactly. Because you know what's funny is many of us are in a hypnotic state when we drive anyway.
Yes.
Right. I mean, how many times have you gone to a place and wondered how you got there?
Yeah. So you're on I-5 and you're wondering how you're able to drive for 4 hours and just not be quite aware that you were driving for so long when you reach Los Angeles.
Yep, and they're wondering how'd I get here and where all the traffic was or whatever else. So we get into that state enough, so we don't need any extra assistance.
Yes, I like how you put that.
So we go through three external visuals, three external audios, auditory, three external kinesthetics, and then we go two visuals, and they're again those would be different than your first three visuals.
Okay.
So you go two visuals, two auditory, two kinesthetics, and you say them either out loud or to yourself, but repeat them. And then you do one visual, one auditory, one kinesthetic. So you go 3, 2, 1, but you do the visuals, auditory, kinesthetic all in a row. Then that takes care of the external. Now you close your eyes and do the internal. So you have one visual, just whatever comes to your mind. It doesn't matter what it is. It could be a park in Yosemite. It could be a pumpkin. It could be a green balloon. Whatever it is, just go, okay, that's it. And then what's the auditory associated with that? Do you hear a sound with that? And then what's the feeling you get when you see that? So you look at, again, if it may be a puppy, so you'd have, you'd hear the barking, and then you feel warm and cuddly because it's a puppy. This is again with your eyes closed. Then you do two. So then you go, you do one picture, the associated auditory with it, and the associated kinesthetic. Then you do another picture and another picture. So you do two. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense so far?
So the order is visual, auditory, kinesthetic.
Correct.
And externally, you're doing a 3-2-1.
Right.
Internally, you're still using the same order, visual, auditory, kinesthetic,
yep.
in that order, and you're going 1-2-3.
1-2-3. And that's the process. So, but the internal part is important, is your eyes are closed.
Yes.
So what the whole premise behind this is, as you're looking at things externally, you're basically lowering your beta waves to alpha. When you close your eyes, you are in alpha state. That's when your unconscious mind is doing its work.
Okay.
If you didn't keep your conscious mind occupied, it would distract your unconscious mind.
Well, you mentioned when you're closing your eyes and you're in alpha state, you're keeping your unconscious mind at work. But
right.
isn't it always at work? Your unconscious mind, isn't it always?
I mean, there's times if you don't control where your conscious mind goes, it's going to go all over.
Okay.
Right. So what could happen? Like when you meditate, the premise of that is you want to have stillness. Mm-hmm. You don't want to think of anything. You want to, yes. And that is possible where you can just. But there's. You're still consciously alert of where you are, right? The Zen masters, you can't sneak up behind them because they're aware of that, but there's no thoughts going through their head per se.
Yes.
So in this particular case, what you're doing is giving your conscious mind direction. So I'm looking at this, an internal representation of a puppy. and then you're going to do two other ones. So as it is, as you are involved in that internal representation, your unconscious mind is working out the solutions.
Yes.
And so then, again, as you pointed out, you go to one, two, three in the internal part, one visual, then auditory, kinesthetic, moving up to three of them.
And then you do, so after the first set, you can say in the internal phase, you do one visual, one auditory, one kinesthetic, and then set two, you do a visual, auditory, kinesthetic, visual, auditory, kinesthetic.
Right.
And then the third set, you do visual, auditory, kinesthetic, visual, auditory, kinesthetic, visual, auditory, kinesthetic.
Right. So it's basically, the routine, the process isn't as important, or the order, as what I'm getting, although this has very specific results that are associated with it. I think the main premise, again, is that you're keeping your conscious mind occupied with something to do, and you know what it's going to be. So you're thinking of these pictures, the feelings that go with it, the sounds that go with it. Let me do another one. Let me do two, as opposed to just letting it wander. So the thing is, once you go into that internal state, this whole process, once you close your eyes to do a total of six, should take about 20 minutes, and you should come out of it feeling fine. And then you trust that the solution is there.
Yes.
And then you act as if it's there. If you are really good at visualization and you go through this very quickly and you're still not out, you just continue until you normally come out. You will actually just sit there and open your eyes when you're done.
Oh, interesting. I'm thinking when you have your eyes opened and you're picking objects, probably be not a good idea to be in a totally plain room with nothing inside, like this office.
Actually, there's probably a lot here, right? I mean, there is quite a few things here that could keep you occupied. Again, it could be spots, right? The spot on the wall, that spot.
Okay.
There's different spots in the wall and that kind of stuff. But it's a very interesting process. And again, the big difference between this process and other self-hypnosis is that you don't give yourself commands like I'm powerful, I'm strong, I'm vibrant, I'm alive. There's no hypnotic suggestions in it. You're giving your unconscious mind a problem to solve. And by keeping your conscious mind occupied by doing the visual, auditory, kinesthetic, it's kind of like the software running in the background, right? Is your unconscious. It's solving that problem for you.
Oh, that's interesting. For instance, there's this expression where when someone has this problem he needs to solve, and he later says, I'll just sleep on it. And when he wakes up the next morning, he notices that he's able to solve that problem or figure things out. Is this similar to...
Yeah, that's exactly that. You know, it's very similar to... I'm sure we've all... This is a very smaller case, but if you forget somebody's name, right, and you keep trying to remember, and you're thinking, it doesn't come, and then you release it and go, oh, that was his name.
Yes.
Right? It's the same process where the more your conscious mind tries to resolve a problem, that's not its job, right? It's the unconscious mind. And how we get the ideas is the unconscious communicates with the conscious once that barrier is broken. Wow. That critical factor is broken. So in sleep, it's a perfect thing, right? The critical factor is not there. It's direct communication between your unconscious, and you wake up and there's the problem solved. So it's very similar to that.
Oh, interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah. And what I like about this is that it can be done anywhere. At any time. You don't have to have any CDs.
Except when you're driving.
Right. But then you can pull up to the side of the road and do it.
Oh, yes, true.
Right? But even if you're in an office, you close the door, you go for 20 minutes if you have a big meeting or if you have a tough client that you need to deal with, you don't know how to do it, right? They're giving you a deadline that you can't meet and you're frustrated. You tell them you get back to them in about, half hour, 20 minutes of this, you have a solution.
Yes. Yes, you do.
You're right. So you don't need to keep your iPod with you or your CDs and go through all the self-hypnosis. This is a great way to do some problem solving. Problem solving and also to help with self-improvement. You know, if there is something that is holding a person back from being more assertive in their life, the unconscious mind knows what to do, and you just ask to solve it.
It seems that the unconscious mind gets to know everything, because Carl Jung had the theory of the collective unconscious, where it's pretty much everyone's unconsciousness in one big pot.
Yep.
And when you're going, it seems that, you know, when you're going through this phase, this routine, you're pretty much accessing to a whole wealth of knowledge.
Yeah, it's very funny. There's a gentleman, Ernest Holmes, who wrote Science of the Mind, who talks about our unconscious is just the portion of the greater, the cumulative unconscious that we use.
Yes.
So if you look at like a big community garden, yes, right, you have your little patch that you use, but it's all part of a larger garden, right? So we have our own little patch, and that's what our unconscious is. It's a small slice of the greater unconscious, or the cumulative intelligence, as I think Napoleon Hill called it, right? The cumulative.
Yes.
So it's that. So it's not unique to us. It's just a small portion that we're using.
Interesting. This is, which means that, you know, if you have a tough client, you got to deal with, and you just remove yourself for 30 minutes during this time, you know, you're getting access to the best advisor there is.
Yeah, exactly. And that gets into the Akashic Records and some other very mystic things that we can go down. But I found that was very helpful. And I'll put the specific directions up on the blog, because I think this is a really powerful tool. And there's been so much accolades on this process that has helped many, many people. And it's a very simple process once you get the hang of it that I think the listeners would enjoy doing that.
On another topic, but still within, you know, within the realm of hypnosis, what kind of services could you do in regards to sports hypnosis or losing weight? Let's talk about that for a short while.
Sure, absolutely. With sports, for sports performance, there's so much to do. There's, you know, NLP and hypnosis are used very, very effectively. It depends what label it is. Sometimes they call it sports psychology. Sometimes they call it, you know, visualization. But with performance, and this could be for pro, amateur, or weekend warriors, right? There's still that aspect of going into an alpha state and doing visualization. And the visualization would be looking at the specific sport that you want to do and performing that function correctly. Now, just a word on that, because I wrote actually a blog post about it today about visualization. There's three ways to observe a specific move, if you will, if it's a baseball or a football player. You can do it, what I call the first person, as if you're looking through your own eyes. So if you wanted to be a better receiver, you would actually see your feet running down as if you were doing that run live. You would see the ball going into your hands and catching it perfectly.
And you're running or dodging all kinds of tackles.
You're doing all of that. You're doing it through your own eyes. The next one would be as if maybe your coach was watching you. So you'd be watching yourself running down the field, dodging the tackles and catching the ball.
Or you could be a fan of the audience saying, go you!
Right, woo! Right. So that's the second person. And then the third would be you're completely removed from the scene completely, like watching a movie. So you actually see the fans, you see the coaches, you see the runner, like we kind of do on TV. And that'd, yes, be the third person. It's been proven that the first person, so looking through your own eyes, produces way better results than the second or third person. So to do visualization, you actually have to go into hypnosis,
okay,
in a sense, because you have to get into that alpha state. And just by sitting quietly, focusing on your breath, and then visualizing the process over and over and over again, you are in a self-hypnosis. And what you're doing is just programming your mind, because the synapses that fire in the brain are going to be the same ones that fire in real life to create the motor units.
Now, does this mean that through enough practice, you'll able to recruit your muscles to get you to run faster?
I'm not too sure about running faster, but you will run more efficient. The key, though, is that you would have had to execute that specific move at least once. Yes. In your life. So if you sat there and never played the piano and visualize yourself playing the piano, that doesn't work. But if you have caught a ball, did a correct move in martial arts, whatever it is, at least once, you can visualize that over and over and over and over again. And there's been many studies of a basketball team, you know, that divide into three. One part of them just practice the free throws in their mind, and they improved as much as the team that did it in real life.
And if you're playing for a professional team, you know, such as in the NFL or MLB, would this give you the edge over your competition?
I would think so. If the other person isn't doing it, I mean, you look at Randy Couture worked with Tony Robbins for his George St. Pierre. Mm-hmm. Does visualization for MMA, and they're like the top guys, right?
Yes.
And you look at Michael Phelps does visualization. So
yes.
So all these, you know, if it didn't work, they wouldn't be doing it.
Yes. And you are correct. You did mention a good point where, you know, you have to at least have done it once,
right,
before. But otherwise, yeah, if you've never fought in an MMA fight, and then
right,
you go start visualizing that you're beating up Randy Couture, and then you get in the octagon and you get your butt kicked, you'll think, oh, that visualization doesn't work. But you have to have been there at least once to have something to refer to.
Exactly. And the key here, again, I mean, this is another topic that we could get into for, you know, a significant time. But the key is that when you visualize, and this is going to sound strange, you don't visualize success. You don't visualize winning the race. You don't visualize winning the match. You don't visualize winning first place. You visualize performing your task the best you can.
So, for instance, when you're running the 100-yard dash, you're not visualizing yourself being the first across the finish line. You're visualizing yourself. You're visualizing your legs, you know, running. You're feeling your legs run so fast. It's very fast that, you know, you can feel kind of like a burn, or you can feel your heart, you know, pumping really fast, and the wind in your face, and just feeling good that you're as you're running, you're in front of your competition. Is that right?
Right. You would visualize yourself executing your task in perfect form.
Okay.
I mean, everything, right? Everything has a form in it, and running has a great form. You, the way you lean forward or stand up can make the difference between winning and losing. So you visualize yourself doing your specific sport at perfect form, because you can only control yourself. You can't control what the person next to you is doing. You can't control the condition of the track. You can't control the condition of the snow if you're skiing. So all of those play a part into winning the race or winning the competition. But what you can do is control your own body. And if you can, when you visualize and controlling your body to do its correct function perfectly, there's a far better chance that you're going to win than the person who doesn't. So in MMA, right, you're visualizing yourself making that perfect contact to the jaw or getting the great arm bar or whatever it may be. You know that you can execute that correctly, the chances are you're going to win the match, as opposed to flailing around out there but seeing yourself win anyway.
I got a question then to even bring this further. Suppose that, you know, you're an Olympic athlete and you're doing your visualizations. For instance, you're competing in the long jump. So you're visualizing yourself executing, you know, the long jump in perfect form. But then you want to bring it further because you don't know the environment that you'll be in. Perhaps the environment, you know, is full of humidity, and that might, you know, affect your performance. Could you visualize yourself performing the long jump while, you know, feeling, you know, the humid air outside?
I mean, I guess you could, except that what if you go to that meet and it's not?
Yeah.
Right. So again, what you can control is your body and the movement. And if you see yourself running down the track, hitting that line, jumping with the right foot, having the right execution, the body weight distribution is correct, everything is perfect, and you see yourself landing in the sand and just doing a great job, That's all you could. And, you know, with that, with the long jump, you could see yourself doing, you know, 22 feet. You look over and see 22 feet or whatever the amount yes. is, right? That, and you can see yourself catching the ball and running for a touchdown. That's not to say don't do those things, but if you focus only on the end result, what gets you to the end result is perfect execution of your technique.
It's all about the journey.
Right. Yeah. Yep. So that's one of the things that is very important. And then for, you know, weight loss, actually, I like to call it weight contribution because, you know, it happens when you lose something.
Yeah.
You go look for it. Yeah. So if people lose weight, they go look for it. And so it's more of a contribution. And that goes with smoking. And there's other processes that are involved with weight loss and smoking or stop smoking than just hypnosis. There's some swish patterns that can take place with NLP and some other things, but definitely hypnosis helps because it can help depending on what the trigger is for those two instances, either overeating or smoking. The hypnosis can help relieve those internal representations.
Okay.
So I think it's, you know, the self-hypnosis technique, again, I, you know, encourage everybody to go play with it, and except for when you're driving.
Or operating heavy machinery.
Right.
Or while welding.
Or, yep, welding or flying a plane.
Yes.
But I think that the more you use it, you know, Erickson said that most people come see him or hypnotherapists because they're out of rapport with their unconscious mind. When people are in rapport with their unconscious mind, that's where they get the gut feelings and they listen to it and they understand the answers, they come up, and then when they're in clear rapport. And when you get into disrapport, life becomes a struggle. It becomes a hassle because your conscious mind is trying to tell you what you do. Your unconscious mind knows what to do, and we don't have that communication.
And you're able to help people get in rapport with their unconscious mind.
Absolutely. That's part of the work I do, is working with NLP, hypnosis, and time empowerment. If they've done so much work on themselves consciously and maybe don't want to have the temperament to do a self-hypnosis, I work with individuals on that case too. But it's all about getting into rapport. So I think the self-hypnosis technique that we discussed here will help people get into rapport with their unconscious. And if they need some more help, they can contact me for that for sure.
Wonderful.
Fantastic. So with that, remember, every facet, every compartment of your mind is to be programmed by you. And if you don't take your rightful responsibility and begin to program your own mind, the world will program it for you.